Good afternoon. Welcome to our podcast, Home Visiting Conversations, which has been developed by the University of New Mexico Center for Development and Disability Home Visiting Consultation Team with the support of the New Mexico Early Childhood Education and Care Department. I am your host, Rachel Morsbach, a University of New Mexico Center for Development and Disability Home Visiting Consultant, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Anna Shipp, a certified life and gratitude coach. So good afternoon, Anna. How are you today?
Hi, Rachel. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so happy to be with you today and to share our time together to talk about self-care, daily care of body and mind. So I'm really excited and looking forward to what you have to offer us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm really excited to have this conversation.
Yay, me too. Absolutely excited. And I think it's something that we all could benefit from. And especially as home visitors and those of us that are serving families and supporting families around the state of New Mexico, it's something that is really relevant to what we are dealing with today. So can you share a little bit about yourself with us?
Sure. I've been on my own personal healing journey for about 8 years now. I've been in the spot of where many of your families are now that you're helping, where I was debilitated by depression, couldn't meet my own needs, couldn't meet the needs of my children, and have gone on a significant journey to reach a place where I am taking care of myself now and making repairs with my children and for, those necessary amends that we have to make when we've been in that spot. And so it's a really beautiful place that I'm in right now. I'm currently writing a book and I compose music and I really enjoy sharing with people things that are helpful, things that can be healing and practical tools. Because I think ideas and concepts are really great, but they're almost meaningless if you can't apply them to your life. So for me, making those ideas and concepts applicable to our lives and immediately putting them into action has been my journey for the last 8 years, just trying and testing out every new thing that I read about and seeing what's good about it, where the challenge is in it, things like that. And so that's been a big part of my journey is putting a lot of the concepts to the test.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And I think what's so beneficial for us to hear from you is that you have gone through it. You've experienced it. You have an understanding and awareness of so many things that so many of us often experience. And so I love that I'm firsthand, right? It's first
Right.
for you and you've been through it, you've gone through it, you're going through it. And now you're on the side of this has worked, and these are things that have worked for me. So I think that
Absolutely.
hearing that is going to help all of us understand, okay, we've been through it. What do we do? Like you said, what are strategies? What are some tips that I can do and share with these families to help support them in their journey?
Right.
Yeah, I
And it
love it.
just becomes this cycle of giving and receiving. I've received so much, and I just feel like I'm in a place to really give so much back to the people around me, to,
Yes. Love it.
life.
I love it. And again, we're so happy because it's understanding the vital importance, right, of daily self-care, not just mentally, emotionally, physically, all those things. So we can just get right to it. Why is self-care so important? What have you discovered?
So I love understanding like the connections of the science behind things. And there are specific chemicals in our brain that, when they are imbalanced, we are experiencing anxiety, depression, fatigue, all the things that make it really hard to engage with life. And so self-care is one of the best ways that we can use the power that we have to, hijack is the wrong word, but to kind of take control and sort of facilitate the release of these important chemicals in our brain. So it's really about brain chemistry regulation. And, you know, when you go to the doctor and you're telling them, these are the things I'm feeling, they're understanding what are these neuroreceptors and what are they doing that it's having these effects. And some of that, sometimes we really do need the support of going to the doctor and getting help. And there's zero shame in that.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the things are just lifestyle choices that we just don't have habits of taking care of ourselves in a way that release those important chemicals so that we can feel engaged and happy in our own lives, where we're not resisting our lives and we're not trying to escape them, but we're being very present in the joy that life has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a really easier thing said than done,
right?
To be able to do that. But that's why it's really important. We have dopamine, which helps us feel happy in life. It helps us feel pleasure because we are wired to avoid pain and seek pleasure. Dopamine's the chemical that helps with that. Oxytocin is the bonding hormone that helps us feel connected so that we're not alone in life, that we feel like we've got support. When we develop connections with other people, oxytocin is that, this is how I'm relating to other people hormone.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got serotonin, which is your mood regulator. And this one is your tolerance to life. There are going to always be ups and downs in life. So if your serotonin is out of balance,
mm-hmm.
your stress tolerance is going to be really low.
Okay.
And the endorphins that we get specifically from moving our bodies, those are really important for helping us to feel happy and to feel like, in a sense, we get a halo every time we exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really, probably 7 years ago when I first heard about the halo effect, that it's like nothing bothers you. You sort of get this natural shield that just moves with you. And, you know, the shorter amount of time you exercise, you can still get it. Like you can get a halo from a 7 minute intense exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to have a different effect than a longer, say, in a 45 minute to hour long walk.
Right.
Where, or dancing, or, you know, playing volleyball or basketball with friends, you know, whatever it is. The longer you do it, the bigger the halo you're going to get. And it increases your stamina and your strength to also deal with life stresses too. So many of the chemicals overlap with each other. And so I saw it a long time ago, get your daily dose.
Uh-huh.
And so we can take a lot of powerful present moment choice points to make sure that we're doing and incorporating in our own personal lifestyles things that help regulate our brain chemistry so that we can feel more present and feel more empowered in our own lives.
And that's so nice to hear. It's understanding the why, right? It's understanding the brain chemistry behind why we feel the way we feel, what's going on. And just like you said, if we understand that, we're able to balance.
Right.
Life, we're able to balance things and it will make sense to us. Okay, this is why I'm feeling this way is because of I worked out for 30 minutes or I went for a walk for 30 minutes. I feel great. I feel like I can do other things. I don't feel as tired. Of course, that's just an example.
Right.
So I love the why. I'm a why person, and understanding the why helps for me to make sense of things.
Right.
So if we understand the why, we can understand the balance. So how do we ensure that balance, right? How do we ensure a work-life balance of adequate self-care to ensure that we're getting that self-care?
Right. So for the work-life balance, I think there's a few things. Number one, we have to allow ourselves to rest. Work really is stressful. And even when you love your work, and even when, and I just want to take a second to honor the work that you guys do.
Mm-hmm.
It is honorable, beautiful work, but you're also seeing people in their worst moments too, and are at the worst parts of their life. where they have the least amount of strength and maybe even the least amount of skills to cope healthily. And that takes its toll. That's stressful. And while there is an inherent reward in helping other people, there is a psychological load and an empathetic load, an emotional load that takes its toll. And so it's really important to recognize the importance of rest and the difference between resting and numbing when we come home from doing that kind of important work. Resting, and a lot of times we just need to give ourselves permission to actually rest.
Right.
You know, and because a lot of times the people that go into the service-oriented industries are the people who grew up without having their needs met. And they're like, you know what? I don't want anyone else to feel that way. And they're very service-oriented individuals, but haven't always taken the time to work through their own injuries of unmet needs. And so when they come home, they continue to be busy. They continue to get lost in more busyness when they come home instead of allowing themselves to rest.
Right.
So I recommend at least 15 to 20 minutes, just rest and be still. It's cultivating a period of stillness after work helps you to kind of take off that load from work and to be able to put on the mom hat or the dad hat that is like, all right, and now I can be present with my family because I've taken time to breathe out and let some of this stress down. So it's not coming out sideways on my kids and spouse. I think another thing is to have some perspective that at work you're replaceable. And, you know, as far employees don't like us to always acknowledge that.
Right.
But it is the truth.
Yes.
You are replaceable at work. If you quit, they would find someone else to come in and do the job. But you are not replaceable in life.
Right.
You're irreplaceable. No one can be you. You are so unique and individual in your unique expression, and that is completely irreplaceable. So having that perspective can help us learn to say no when we need to say no.
Right.
And because, again, service-oriented individuals tend to take on more than they can handle because they don't want to let anybody down.
Right.
And what happens is they end up letting themselves down. They end up self-betraying, self-denying, and they struggle with the ability to say no. And so learning that it's okay to say no, you know, that helps maintain that stress. And then making sure that the life that you're living outside of work is a life you don't want to escape from.
Yes.
Making sure that you're taking time, you know, to do the things that you really enjoy doing in life, prioritizing that can also make it more bearable to come to work.
Yes.
Because then you don't have two environments that are causing you just a ton of stress, even though you love them both, you know, like it's learning how to recognize that it's okay to say no. It's okay to have limits and to know your own limitations. And so I think that's another important part of recognizing what's my work-life balance that's sustainable.
Well, and I love that. What's sustainable? And again, like you said, service-oriented people have a very hard time. I love what you said, saying no, because they don't want to let anyone down. So it's a matter of finding that balance, like you've been talking about, is how do we recognize what we need so that we can be our best selves? We have
Right.
to address that. We have to be okay with, you know what, now is not a good time. I need this time to do these things, and then I can be present and that's something we talk about all the time in home visiting, is we are expressing to our families to be present, to do meditation, to do mindfulness
Right.
practices, to do self-care. And then we oftentimes forget to do it ourselves. So
exactly.
What are those obstacles? What do you think those obstacles are for those of us in the field of service, of supporting others, finding ourselves in a challenging way of actually doing what we are saying for our families to do?
Well, I think hands down, the biggest obstacle is already having lifelong habits of not caring for ourselves. So many of just individuals all over the earth, you know, all over and families everywhere, we just have a lot of dysfunctional patterns. And the reality of having a childhood where you didn't have your needs met is that we often grow into adults who continue to not meet our own needs.
Yes.
Sometimes because we don't know how or we don't feel worthy of it.
Mm-hmm.
So dealing with the patterns of unworthiness and learning to give ourselves permission to say, I get to have my needs met now. Like I'm the adult now. I am the provider and I can say yes to these things, you know, but habits that have been going for a lifelong span, you know, I'm in my 40s now. So I started in my 30s learning how to do self-care. It's taken me 8 years to feel really comfortable prioritizing self-care and to know my children are not going to suffer. They're actually helped and benefited by me prioritizing the time I need to take care of myself. My husband is not hurt by me taking this time for myself. And we actually have an agreement that Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, those are our individual nights to do our thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tuesdays and Thursdays and the weekends, those are our together time. But those 3 nights a week where, you know, after dinner until bedtime, that really is our time. And our kids are a little older now. Like they're more self-governing. So it may not be something that would work for all families, depending on how old the children are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think coming to clear agreements with your spouse of getting that individual time, and we all need it. And so I don't know of very many spouses that'd be like, oh no, you can't have any alone time, you know,
right?
Or any partners that would be like, no, we always have to be together. You know, like we all sort of need that breather,
right?
To have some time to ourselves. And so I think that when we prioritize that, it starts sending the message to our own cells and to our own psyche that I'm going to take care of you now. I'm giving you what you need and I will be here for you. And then that allows us to start changing those habits.
Right.
And, you know, I like to think of it, it's a marathon. We're training for a marathon, a lifelong sustained effort of running.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a sprint. We greatly overestimate how much we can do in a short amount of time. And we underestimate how much tiny steps over a long period of time can accomplish.
Yes.
So changing habits, the smaller you start, the more sustainable it's going to be to keep going at it. So you might not want to overhaul your entire lifestyle at once,
mm-hmm.
but pick one thing, one food that will help you that you want to focus on. And for me, this year, it's drinking water. That's the one food thing. I just need to drink more water. And I'm not saying no to soda or energy drinks. I'm just drinking water in between them.
Awesome.
You know, making sure I get that water so that I'm building the habit now of drinking more water. When it comes to exercise, I'm doing a 7-minute exercise. That's it. I am not ready to commit to an hour long a day, but I can commit to 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was a period probably 6-ish years ago where I was able to do an hour every day, but just in a different season of life.
Right.
That's not the season of life I'm in right now. And so I think recognizing and honoring the season that you're in can help with changing your habits in a sustainable way.
Yes.
And then I also recommend the book Atomic Habits by James Clear.
Okay.
As he talks about habit stacking,
Ooh.
where if you have things that you already do, add something that you want to do onto something that you already do. So if you want to read something positive every day, like schedule it or have it ready when you wake up in the morning and you already pick up your phone, then have that, you know, positive article that you want, already have it on your phone, on your tab, so that when you turn it on and you hit that, you know, your Google tab or whatever, it pops right up. You know, like whatever it is that you want to do, add it to something that you already do, and it will be easier than trying to do something when you've never done it.
Yes.
You know,
I love that, because again, what happens, what you're talking about here, is when we think huge all the time, what typically happens is we feel overwhelmed. And when we feel overwhelmed, we give up. A lot easier than, okay, like you said, that 7 minutes, I can commit to 7 minutes. That's perfect. 7 minutes is plenty for me, just like you said, in my time right now. This is the phase of life I'm in. I'm okay with it. And I think that's the kicker too, is us being okay with starting small, and that's eventually going to become something we don't even have to think about.
Exactly.
Because it's a habit that we formed because we started small, and then it just becomes a part of what we do.
Right. And then the other thing that I think is another obstacle, and it's not, and I think everyone has this, but not necessarily to the same degree, depending on how challenging your life has been, to some degree. But when you have grief, unresolved grief, and unresolved, you know, healing work that needs to be done, sometimes your energy is all tied up in trying to keep the lid on top of everything. And when that's where all your energy is going, you don't have it where you need it,
right?
In the things that you want to do. So I highly encourage getting a therapist or finding a coach or reading a book, something that can help you have permission to feel and to grieve some of those childhood losses that follow us into adulthood. You know, when we allow ourselves to kind of break open from time to time, that frees up that energy from trying to keep the lid on so tight anymore.
Right.
You know, and when we can sit with that, and when it, not necessarily the emoting part of it, but just sit with it and letting the feeling rise and have the cleansing tears that come, you know, with it, that is so underestimated of how powerful that is. If you can allow yourself to feel, when you go to a home and the dynamics there trigger something within you, a memory from your own growing up, and it just makes you sad, feel the sad. Because that's an opportunity to work through another layer of your own stuff. And this empathy for this family is giving you a key to unlock that door.
Yes.
You know, and it's and it will allow you to be more present with them the next time you go see them. You know, and to just be able to be a better and better and better. Like, it's every time you do it, more and more energy gets freed up. It gets freed up for the exercise. It gets freed up for, you know, focusing on your food and, you know, all those things, for engaging with people you love to engage with. You know, it's, I don't think that it can be overestimated how powerful it is to do your grief work.
Well, and you're speaking so much to what home visitors are constantly holding. They are constantly hearing so much from these families, and it, some of the things, just like you said, are oftentimes triggering. So I love that you said that, allowing ourselves to be okay with how we're feeling. We have to allow that, because we can't keep sweeping it under the rug, because what eventually happens?
It just comes right out.
Yep.
You can't hide it anymore.
Exactly.
It gets
right.
called out.
Right. So and that's so perfect with the work that we do in home visiting, is we have that reflective piece of home visiting that allows us to unload and talk about why was this, why did I feel like this during this visit? What happened within this visit for me to get all these feelings that, and so it helps with reflecting on it and seeing that, okay, this is why. And I love that you're talking about that healing. It is that it's a huge piece of self-care because just like you said, it uncovers things, but it also helps us to get rid of things.
Yes. It allows your body to purge that energy that's been stored for so long. And it gets freed up.
Yes, I love that. So in thinking about so all these different strategies you've been talking about, what we need to do to allow ourselves to have self-care, to be okay with it, how can we create self-care plans that we are okay with? Like what are some things that would look like as far as what we prefer, what our unique needs are, what do you think about that? How do we do that?
So I like to use the chemicals as the guideline. So with dopamine, make a list of all the things that release pleasure for you. Foods, experiences, people, you know, like things that you do, that activities, different things like your hobbies and your interests, skills that you have, that when you engage with them, they help you feel happy and help you feel pleasure specifically. Those are going to be, you're going to want to look for ones that continue to help you feel good and not the ones that over time are self-destructive. So if you look for the things like, I love going for a drive, or I love standing with my feet in wet dirt, like not necessarily mud, but damp dirt. I love the feel of that. It reminds me of the beach. Or being on a beach, being at a water's edge. For me, that's huge. To like feel and you listen to those sounds. Those create pleasure within me, especially on a sunny day. Or for me, it's playing the piano or drawing. For my daughter, it's cooking. She loves to cook things, you know, and I've got another daughter that she loves creating masks, and she does these 3D masks, and she can spend 3 hours at a time. So it's like, what are these things that you do that are constructive, that feel good, and that release pleasure? Your favorite foods. And I know that's a dangerous thing for, you know, if there's food addiction. And so there would be something to, you know, work around that, work around what you've got going on, what's safe for you and what's not. You know, but it is good to know, what do you have that you can use to feel pleasure? Do you like getting a back rub? Do you, you know, enjoy crocheting or like giving a hug? You know, there's different things that feel really good and pleasurable, a hot bath, you know, whatever it is, make a list of all the things. For me, it's chocolate and caramel. If I could get a bite of chocolate and caramel at the right time of day, like that does a lot. Yeah.
That's all you need.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you make a list of all of those things. Go to oxytocin. Who are the people you feel connected to? And especially, who are the people you feel good about yourself when you're around them, and that help you feel better about yourself after having interacted with them? We have a lot of people that we surround ourselves with sometimes that don't necessarily fit that bill. So you want to figure out, who are your people that are encouraging and that you feel like, yes, I want to share my journey with these people. Write that down. Serotonin, your mood regulators, getting sunshine, meditating, journaling, make a list, like look up serotonin boosting activities and make a list of those things that contribute. Meditation, mindfulness, a gratitude practice. And I'll say here, for gratitude, a lot of people do it mentally, but they're not necessarily doing it from the heart. And I'll tell you the difference about this.
Okay.
Because this makes a huge difference, because a lot of people think, oh, gratitude doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is because they're practicing gratitude and they're saying things they know they should be grateful for, but not the things they're actually feeling gratitude for. So they'll say, oh, I'm so grateful for my family, while their family is their greatest source of stress. It's like, in that moment, no, you're not. You're grateful for a door you can lock and get behind so that you can have a moment to yourself to breathe.
Right.
And so you would say, you know, you practice gratitude where you are. When I was in my debilitating depression, the part of gratitude that brought me out of it was saying, I am so grateful. I only cried 6 times today instead of 8 times like yesterday. I am really grateful that, like, while I'm in this space, I've got a comfortable bed to be in. You know, you've got to practice gratitude for it to work where you are, not where you think you should be.
I love it.
Yeah. And it's really powerful because it builds upon itself when you practice it where you are. So even in your darkest places, you really can practice gratitude. I mean, eventually this will end. Either I will heal and get better, or one day my body will just give out, because that's the natural process of life, you know? And there's hope in that. And so if we can honor that without it being something scary or dark or, you know, wrong to think that, it can pull you out of some of those dark, heavy moments where just that thought, this is not permanent, that can be a really hopeful, like a hopeful thought when you're in a really, really low space. And making space that it's okay to have those low moments. We don't have to judge them.
Right.
We just got to sit our way through them, because they do end. We do find another moment where we can breathe again, you know, if we can just stay with it. And so honoring our experience where it's at and finding that one thought that offers relief, that's what you practice gratitude for.
I love that. Well, and again, in this work that home visitors do, we always talk about strengths. So even in those moments of darkness and challenging times with families, we hone in on that because we are very good at listening to what is going on and meeting the families where they are. And we always are able to say, hey, but what did this look like for you today? And we talk about the strengths. And so when we're able to talk about one, even if it's hard to find sometimes, there's something there. Just like you said, there's something there in a way that we can build upon. And it's not always going to be this way. And so that's what I love about this self-care piece and the home visiting piece and what you're talking about, is because we're helping support these families recognize and understand their own strengths and what they actually are capable of doing.
Yes, absolutely. And then for E, endorphins, make a list of all your movements, any activity that gets your body moving, make a list of the things that you enjoy. So then once you have these, then you can either create a little schedule of, like, you know what, I will dance to 2 songs. That's my 7-minute workout, is I just dance my heart out to 2 songs that I enjoy. And that's my movement for that day, you know, my intentional movement. Or, you know, and it can be like, what is the different activity for that day? I'm going to snuggle with my daughter, you know, for 10 minutes every day, because, you know, we've been needing to improve our connection, and I would like to grow closer to her. So we're going to connect for 10 minutes every day. And so she comes to my bed 10 minutes before she's supposed to, like, get up to get ready for school. And she just snuggles with me. And that's our intentional connection. That's some oxytocin that you can get just like that. And they don't have to be hard, and to be effective.
Right.
They don't have to be big. They can be very simple things. But, like, what is one thing that you can do for your mood regulation that day? Are you going to do a mindful exercise, a gratitude exercise? Are you going to just go for a walk and appreciate the things that you see? and say, wow, that bird is so beautiful, you know, where you're noticing things to be appreciative of. And then just make a little routine. And if you're the type of person who needs a lot of variety, just have your list where you can see it. Then pick one thing from the list, and you don't go to bed until you've done something on each list. And that can be like really, really powerful. And then I'm trying to remember, I think it's under serotonin, that completing a task, it might be both, there's an overlap between serotonin and dopamine. But if you complete a task, so you make a list of things that you would feel really satisfied and rewarded by getting them done. That can also be something that helps with your brain chemistry. But some of us have ADHD, and that can be challenging. So a tip there is called body doubling, where you invite someone else. And so I have a friend that we alternate every other week, where we'll go to her house, and for 1 hour she does her tasks, and I'm just there to like be someone to talk to and to be that witness. And then she comes to my house and we do our tasks at my house for an hour. And it's just 1 hour twice a month. And it helps us get stuff done. And it's stuff that we would just naturally procrastinate and put off because, you know, the idea of doing it actually doesn't sound all that great.
Right.
You know, it'll feel good once we get it done. But that extra help, if you get the body doubling, we can move it along. And then you get both the dump of the oxytocin of having the person there that you enjoy spending time with. And you can do this by talking with someone on the phone while you're doing it too. That's also effective body doubling. But so you get that connection, and then you also get the task completed. And so you've got both chemicals coming in. So it's there's a lot of things that you can do that are very small. It might be just cleaning out, you know, the silverware drawer because it's gotten some crumbs in it and it's been bugging you.
Right.
You know, that can feel really good to finally have that done.
Right.
So, and that's self-care too, because if it's taking up some of your mental load, bug you about that, and you just get it done, you know, that frees up that energy.
Right.
So you just make that list, and you can create a tracking sheet, put it where you see it. Or, you know, I like to put it in my journal. Then I like seeing the check marks when I did my things. So that's also a little bit of a reward for me to do the check. But yeah, so that's come up with your own thing. You know your needs, you know what specific to your family. If you've got younger children, it might be really necessary to say, all right, I need help. And if you've got a spouse or not, you find help for 1 hour to take care of the kids so that you can dive in and you give yourself full permission to use that hour to rest or to go have fun doing something that you really enjoy doing, you know. And so it's prioritizing it and just making sure it gets done.
Right. Well, and it's also what you're talking about too, is when we do things we enjoy, it builds confidence.
Yes.
It builds energy. We have more time to actually do things because we have decided that I am putting forth this effort so that I do have more energy. So when we feel good, we always have more energy, right? And so it's actually taking that step to find what works and what we enjoy, like you've been talking about. What do I like to do? And I, again, love starting small. I think that that is huge for what we can accomplish in the long run, is that starting small and building upon that. And how, so how do these, can these things that you're talking about, you know, the meditation, the yoga, the exercises, the journaling, how can they contribute to a well-rounded self-care routine?
So it hits the different needs that we have. We have physical needs, we have mental needs, we have emotional needs, and we have spiritual needs. And when we hit all of those points, Number one, like you said, our energy becomes sustainable. So when we don't honor our needs, we become useless to everyone eventually. We might be able to give and give and give to a point, but then there comes a point where your body, it just takes its toll and your body can't handle it anymore. And then we start experiencing anxiety and depression, fatigue, low stress tolerance. We can't handle things the way that we could before. So doing all of these different things, when you hit the different needs that we have in small, sustainable ways, it increases your stress tolerance. It increases your ability to know where your limitations are and how to safeguard the energy you have. You gain more self-awareness and I believe more compassion for other people. It becomes a lot easier to move through the ups and downs of life. And the well-rounded self-care routine will keep you from getting in a rut. You know, and there may be some times where you're really good in one area, but not so good in another. So it's always good to be flexible and willing to adjust as the needs arise.
Right.
Because what works in one season might not work in another season of life. You know, when I was a mom of really young children, there were things I could not do that I have the freedom to do now.
Right.
And things that were so rewarding then, like having that time to myself after being touched out, where it's like, ooh, I am taking a hot bath and I am just shutting everyone out, you know. Now, like, the hot bath is something different for me.
Right.
You know, it's cultivating the stillness. And I imagine that as my kids, you know, continue to leave the home and we have less and less children at home now, that the freedom I have is going to be different than when we have any of the kids home. You know, so I think that there is a lot of awareness required to maintain a well-rounded self-care routine. But it just begins by starting.
Yes.
Like just setting that intention and taking those first steps. Relapses are going to happen. Relapses into habit where we numb out, we scroll for 2 hours instead of going to bed. Maybe we eat mindlessly and we start feeling sluggish and we don't like the way we feel anymore in our bodies. Those things are alerts to us.
Yes.
When we start feeling bored, those are alerts that, all right, it's time to like reprioritize. It's time to like up level. Sometimes when you start small, it feels monumental at first, but then as it gets better, then you're ready to up level to the next thing.
Right.
It keeps you fresh, keeps you sharp.
Right.
You know? So I think that all of those things, number one, they add variety, they add, which is the spice of life, you know, but they also add the ability to develop more skills.
Yes.
As we go.
Right.
And which that helps us in every area of life. The more we're able to care for ourselves, the more awareness we have to see what's needed for other people and when it's time to let them do it for themselves and when it's time for us to step in.
Well, I love that. Well, and I think one big thing that stuck out to me today is what you're talking about right now. The awareness that there's a time and a season and that is going to change, and that this is an ongoing process. That this is something that is not a one and done thing. It is something that we have to continue to try to figure out. And something that works, like you said, one time, it may not work in a couple of years. And so that's the great thing about it too, is recognizing that this is a lifelong dedication of figuring things out, of figuring out what works for me, what doesn't work for me, and that there is a time and a season.
Yeah. And honoring that it's about a lifestyle change of self,
yes,
of caring for ourselves and making sure our needs are being met instead
mm-hmm.
of continuing the pattern that we've all done, where we're just coping without our needs being met.
Right.
And then hoping for the best.
Right.
You know, it's taking that control and using the power that we have in the place where we have it, which is for ourselves.
Right.
No one else can take that place. No one else can do it.
Right. We're always with ourselves, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we
So,
just have to look ourselves in the mirror. You know, so why not look ourselves in the mirror and be like, I love you. I'm going to take care of you. And I'm so glad that we did what we needed today. You know, and we start changing that pattern where we deny ourselves or think that we're not worthy. And we get to the point where we can lovingly look in the mirror, say, yeah, I love you. You did awesome today.
Right.
And we're going to like try again tomorrow. Or you know what? We messed up today. But, you know, we're going to do what we can to make it right. We're going to do what we can to fix what we can. And we're just going to try again tomorrow.
Right.
It's okay.
Right.
You know, once you start self-care, your self-talk changes monumentally.
Yes.
And that has its own domino effect.
Right. Well, and so this information, it has really enlightened me. And I definitely am grateful for your time and dedication of sharing your knowledge and skills and your experiences and helping people heal and feel alive. So I'm so grateful for you and thank you so much for your efforts in doing this with us today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being here. And if I could just put one last plug in, sleep cannot be underrated.
Oh,
How
yes.
Important sleep is. We need to have good sleep habits. So, you know, that would be my last suggestion is just make sure we get good sleep and give yourself permission to rest.
Oh, yes. I love
So.
that. I'm all about naps and sleep. So I totally
Yes.
go along with that. And I completely agree with that. We have to rest our bodies to feel okay.
Yes.
So
it's really
I appreciate
important for
saying
that
that.
regulation of the brain chemistry too. So
Yes, absolutely. And just for everyone out there, we have prepared a helpful tips and resources sheet as well, filled with expert advice to assist you in daily care of body and mind, along with our podcast today. So we hope you will join us for our upcoming podcast hosted by the UNM Center for Development and Disability, Home Visiting Conversations. Take care and stay well.